Hi everyone, and welcome to Fraser's Capital Podcast. Today I'm speaking with Ben Crotchmar, and we're going to try and talk about chips, gaming, and all things new tech. Hope you enjoy the show. Hi Ben, thanks for coming on.
Hi Fraser, it's good to be here.
Great. I know you've been a long-time investor in NVIDIA. I was wondering if you could take us through that, because obviously it's been one of the star performers in tech over the last few years, particularly in the very large cap space. So maybe you give us some like thoughts on that.
Well, just a little like background. So NVIDIA's been a stock that, you know, it's sort of been a winner in the technology sphere for a while, just because, well, at the time, it's sort of interesting to look at it as how trends have changed. I mean, NVIDIA started off as, from a GPU perspective, as purely a gaming play back in 2016, and, you know, sort of rode the tailwinds of the blockchain trend back when that was a thing. But in general, like back in the day, they were purely gaming, just purely driving the visual side of video games. But as we've seen the last
couple... Which computers were they in?
Honestly, just personal computers,
retail. People would buy specialized chips sometimes. If you're really into your gaming, how do you set yourself up?
So they have their GTX line, which is their line of chips, which is purely for, well, right now it's also, I'll talk in a bit what it's used for now, but back in the day it was purely gaming, and they would have their 180 line, which is, you know, the more advanced version than the lower versions. But in general, it was like back in 2016, it'd be a little more popular to build your own computers. So what would happen is they would price their chips a bit differently, and people would build their own computers. And if every time a game would come out, you know, the load of graphics needed to play the game would be a lot higher, and you get a new chip and so on and so forth. So they had sort of that as a residual demand chain when it came to buying new chips. But these days, I mean, obviously, as you can see with the recent deal with Mellanox and how they've been going lately and how, you know, things in general have been going lately, they've transitioned really well into the data center sphere and just... but also to a degree, automated driving, but mostly the revenue in the last couple of years has been mostly driven by the shift to GPUs as processors within data centers, which has been a very interesting shift. I mean, obviously, you know, data centers have become sort of central part of the economy with how much data needs to be stored in cloud and how much sort of processing power is needed to move data within data centers and the whole interlay with the data center interconnectivity and things on those lines.
So it's pretty interesting around like Bitcoin. I remember that because people were buying NVIDIA's for their farms. What was that story? Can you talk us about that?
Now, back in the day, so the whole blockchain thing was kind of funny because in 2017, blockchain suddenly became incredibly popular. So what happened was, well, people started hearing about Bitcoin. You had all those weird cryptocurrencies coming out, like Ethereum, Dogecoin, which still exists. But at the time, they just saw these like massive outplays, and it suddenly became profitable to mine Bitcoin. Because, I mean, the mining Bitcoin equation is fairly simple. To mine Bitcoin or any cryptocurrency, the cost of the electricity and power needed to mine the Bitcoin has to be less than the value of the Bitcoin. So it's a plus NPV decision to do it. And then so all of a sudden, people would buy these massive units within their houses to mine Bitcoin. And I guess this did kind of signal NVIDIA's shift to more of into using GPUs in more of a processing sector. Because what happened is all of a sudden people realized that GPUs were not only useful for, you know, processing graphics, but just accelerating CPU systems in general. So people would buy NVIDIA chips in order to run these massive sort of Bitcoin mining stacks, which would at the time be profitable. But then, I mean, there was also that whole story with every company would slap blockchain in front of the name, yet blockchain long T and things like that.
It's been so many of those stories over the years, even just the last two or three years, hasn't there?
Yeah. Well, semiconductors in general have been on the forefront of pretty much everything that's going on. Because the semiconductor, at the end of the day, is the chip which enables processes within systems. I mean, it's a very like broad term. And it makes sense that they've found their way into everything just because things are a lot more connected these days. I mean, people talk about the Internet of Things. People talk about that area in general has become a lot bigger in the sense that, like, devices need to communicate with each other, and semiconductors help with that. That's like on the basis, because they enable broadband connections, they enable interconnectivity within devices. So you need semiconductors, and it makes sense that we're seeing it like pop up everywhere. If you look at how, like, NVIDIA's gone from what, a $25 billion company back when I heard about it, to a $200 billion company now.
It's huge increase in value, isn't it?
5 years, yeah, and that's a massive company, and it's one of the companies where the value is actually there. Like, it's not trading at a ridiculous multiple. Like, the actual revenue is there. So it's like it's a solid company, but just appeared out of nowhere.
How do you see NVIDIA compared to the other chip makers?
So first of all, like, they're mainly, it's interesting because back in the day, people would compare NVIDIA solely to AMD because obviously they produce GPUs, AMD produced GPUs. They're pit against each other because GPUs were used solely, well, not solely, but the main purpose of GPUs was in graphics processing. And all of a sudden, you know, people started using NVIDIA in the CPU sphere and using it for the, like, processing power within data centers. So now they're competing with Intel. But NVIDIA's really held their ground well. And it's not, they've always been at the forefront of this. Because there's a sort of like positive feedback loop created with creating new chips. Because within the process of designing new chips, there's a lot of neural networks and AI involved with sort of developing new chips. So you can sort of see how, you know, creating chips that make that faster lead to the creation of new chips. And it sort of leads to, it's like an exponential design loop, which allows them to sort of hold a strong lead.
Yeah, got it. I mean, AMD's got, what's that, UK company. They've got a very different model though, don't they?
AMD, so, I mean, AMD has a different model in the sense that, if I remember correctly, let me just check. They marketed back in the day as a lower end GPU with their Ryzen and that. And but now what they've done is they've sort of realized they can't really compete with NVIDIA in the GPU department and really taken a solid place as sort of the leading CPU guys. Because Intel have really fallen asleep on the wheel. I mean, back in the day, Intel were the top dogs in that sphere, and all of a sudden they're just sort of there. I mean, they still have a large part in broadband networks and all that stuff. But when it comes to actual computers, they've really lost a lot of market share to AMD in the last year. Because AMD completely diverted from the whole high-end GPU path that NVIDIA's dominated just because they realize they can't compete.
Right. Yeah, I'm just thinking, yeah, NVIDIA's, I remember a few years ago, it was one of the really hot stocks. Oh, basically on the back of that Bitcoin thing. And then what it did, it dropped from about 280 to 120. It's funny, whenever you see these amazing companies that, you know, there's like terrible news flow and they drop, you know, since then it's gone from 120, which it stayed at for several months, well, 120 down to three, up to 380 in 2 years.
Yeah. It had one bad year. And I mean, everyone has one bad year because it was just a horrible time for semiconductors in general. This was back in early 2019.
Yeah.
It was
because of the demand for Bitcoin mining. Hey, what happened? I was pretty obsessed by Bitcoin at the time, but I haven't really followed up on the mining economics ever since.
It just became unprofitable.
Became unprofitable for everyone.
It just became unprofitable.
And spare capacity, and everyone built these mining rigs and all these cheap chips out there.
I mean, I also don't think, if you look at how much it drove growth for NVIDIA, it wasn't actually that much. But, you know, the second people say, you know, Bitcoin's going down, GPUs are like, it's just a headline sort of thing. It never really compromised that big of a portion of NVIDIA's revenue, but it did sort of, you know, it did hurt the stock. I mean, but it's doing well now. And same with AMD, by the way. AMD and NVIDIA both all-time highs consistently. I mean, they're pretty unstoppable, both those stocks.
Yeah, let's pull up a chart of Intel. This is something I haven't looked at in a while.
Yeah, that's everyone.
Yeah, Intel has gone almost nowhere in the last few years.
Intel hasn't moved since 2018. Well, 2017 even.
Isn't it funny? This is amazing. Obviously, there's been a huge tech boom in parts of tech, but other parts of tech have just gone sideways, particularly these old kind of companies that, you know, missed a trend or didn't invest. You can almost like feel the arrogance of some of these companies in Australia.
Intel is 100% falling asleep on the wheel. That's like the story with Intel. It's very unfortunate because, like, back in the day, they were the company. It's like, it's incredible what's happened to Intel. Like, by the way, they're still an amazing company. Don't get me wrong. Intel's still killing it in what they're doing, but they just lost. Like, they lost the CPU battle against AMD with personal computers, and they completely got usurped by NVIDIA when it comes to data centers.
Mm. And now NVIDIA's got the same market cap as Intel.
Yeah.
Always better backing, you know, and again, like, the growth rate is just like the guide. Like, they have to grow faster, take the market.
Well, it doesn't help 40% that
growth.
So Intel, when it comes to processing power, focused purely on CPUs and didn't really, because I know last podcast you talked briefly about Moore's Law and what that means in terms of CPUs. And part of the way to circumnavigate, by the way, Moore's Law in its briefest term is just the idea that chip density has to halve every 2 years in order for CPU performance to continue growing at an exponential rate or a linear rate. And so what that means essentially is that obviously CPUs have kind of, when it comes to with like the actual mechanics within CPUs, have sort of reached an atomic level at the moment, which doesn't allow for the same level of growth within processing power, because, you know, you can't go small with atoms unless you're getting really into it. But what that means is that you have to think of new ways to accelerate and increase processing power. And one of the ways to do that, as NVIDIA has shown, is with GPUs. And there's a lot of ways to do this. The actual mechanics behind it are very complicated. I'm not going to pretend to understand it. But they've shown that they've managed to consistently increase performance of GPUs despite Moore's Law, them being in a post-Moore's Law era, as they call it. And they're very aware of it. If you go to their earnings report, they're very aware of it. They know they're in post-Moore's Law. And it makes sense. You can't go smaller anymore.
So what do the gamer kids want to use today if they're building their own setups?
NVIDIA, 100%. What's been interesting to me is NVIDIA's always been like the GPU company. AMD sort of had, back in 2018, some ground, but NVIDIA's always been top dog. But what's been more interesting is that when it comes to CPUs, AMD's become very popular. I don't know the actual, I remember back in 2019 that captured 20% of the market share, and that 5% in 2018. Now it's probably more. And even with pre-built laptops and things like that, I'm seeing a lot more AMD CPUs, which is very interesting. But NVIDIA is always there. There's no comparison. NVIDIA has over 80% of the market share when it comes to GPUs, and it makes sense. There's just no feasible comparison.
Hmm. What do you think of gaming at the moment? Any interesting stocks and opportunities and trends?
Yeah, gaming in general has changed a lot in the last couple of years. And I think for me, the most interesting thing I've seen in gaming is the shift to mobile gaming. But we've seen that with C and China especially, in the sense that it's very rare that... So back in the day, mobile gaming, when you think of mobile gaming like a long time ago, well, this is like 4 years ago, you think of like Candy Crush or something. But what we've seen in China especially, and now starting in the US with like Call of Duty Mobile, PUBG Mobile and all those kind of games, is that, and also Fortnite Mobile, people have started, like companies especially, like Activision with Call of Duty Mobile, and by the way, Activision also owns Candy Crush, but that's a whole different story with King. And it's also half of the revenue, but for some reason, it isn't marketed as Activision. But with those kind of games, companies have started taking their IPs and converting them to mobile, and there's a lot of reasons behind it. First of all, it's easy. I mean, you have an existing IP with like a strong brand name like Call of Duty. It's very easy to turn that into a mobile game. But also the profitability in mobile games in comparison to PC games and console games is incomparable, especially with sort of the issues within profitability in PC in general at the moment and console, because we had that whole loot box fiasco back in 2018. And now it's just sort of, it's muddy waters for those areas. But when it comes to the freemium model that a lot of mobile games take, it just ends up being a lot better when it comes to making money. Like, heaps.
How's the experience of playing Call of Duty on a mobile relative to PlayStation? Surely it's quite different.
It's definitely different, but what these companies have started to do, and I'll talk a second about Free Fire, which is like, that's C's game that's been a massive success, which sort of follows the same model Call of Duty Mobile has gone through, which is accessibility, the focus on, because Call of Duty has always been about accessibility, even on the console and PC sphere.
What do you mean by accessibility here in this context?
Oh, ease of access. It's easy to get into. Right. It's easy to play.
Easy to start. Easy to be a beginner, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. And also, like, it's low entry barriers, but for video games, if that makes sense. It's not like chess where all of a sudden you're playing against a, you know, 2,000 rated player and you just got it, and it's very different. And with them, that allows for a more easy experience. But the thing is, what's so interesting about American mobile games versus Chinese games is that they're a lot better in the sense that the graphics are better, the actual experience is better. And that's not because American developers are better or anything in that sense. It's just that what the Chinese markets have realized is that you look at the smartphone composition in China versus the US. People in China have a lot worse. The standard of smartphones in general is a lot lower, right? On average, some people have worse smartphones. So with games like Free Fire, which is C's massive game at the moment, got over 100 million downloads just this week, about 450.
100 million in the week. It's crazy, isn't it?
It got 400.
Amazing how big these markets are. So for people who don't know, C, when Ben says C, he's referring to an e-commerce company. They kind of have two divisions. They're the number one in e-commerce in Southeast Asia. They've got a gaming division that kind of started through licensing through Tencent, which Ben, you know a lot about. It's also one of our portfolio companies, and it's done extraordinarily well.
Oh, it's certainly
surpassed our expectations. Yeah, it's amazing that the revenues have kept up with the growth of the stock.
That's rare, especially for something like that. But
continue. So you're saying there were 100 million downloads of Free Fire last week.
And by the way, just for this is like the next topic, which I want to talk about, is why it's so much easier to make games in those regions than in America. And the reason is copyright laws. Because Free of Fire at its core is essentially a Players Unknown Battleground mobile clone. You have an American IP called PUBG, which is owned by a private company. And Free Fire is essentially a clone, like a not even one-to-one. It's like
knockoff, ripoff.
It is a ripoff, which is, I mean...
Interesting. Because was it a Tencent game originally? What was the background to Free Fire?
No, it's actually their first own developed game. It's the first privately developed game within the Grana platform. But the thing is, so in the area, Tencent owns the right of refusal laws and agreements for PUBG, so they can get away with the copyright issues associated with essentially ripping off a game. Because what they did is they took the game and made it, like, they lower the graphic standard, they make it more accessible, they make it easier to run on low performance devices, and all of a sudden everyone can play it. Because a lot of its success has been in also Latin American markets, where all of a sudden people can play a game on their phone, which is essentially the same as another game, but they can actually play it because their phone can run it, which is incredible. And it works well. Like, oh my God, it works well. If you see the company, it's been...
Have you played Free Fire?
I actually haven't. I've never been a big mobile game guy myself. It's just a small device. It's not really that enjoyable. But
sort of thought, but then you see these numbers coming through. Like, that's why I try not to have opinions on these things. I just try and look at the data.
Yeah. Well, listen, I guess that's it. Because I've always played video games. Well, I was big in video games back in the day, unfortunately, but I kind of stopped.
What did you used to play?
Let's see. 2000. So early days, like every other kid, it was Call of Duty. I mean, I grew up on Call of Duty, like every other kid, and Pokemon back in the, like, that's in the, you know, kid
Pokemon?
Day. Yeah, Pokemon. Pokemon's a classic. I mean, Nintendo's kind of, you know, they had their stop phase with Pokemon Go and haven't really been heard about since. Not really sure how they've been performing. But yeah, Pokemon back in the day was amazing. Yeah, you grew up on it. But then, like, the later years, probably League of Legends, good amount of League of Legends, which is Tencent. It was created by Riot Games, but right now it's owned by Tencent. It's actually one of the, actually, I think it's the world's most popular game by a massive margin. And yeah, it's a MOBA. Do you know what a MOBA is?
No, say it again.
MOBA. It's a massively online battle arena game.
Right.
I think that's what it stands for. It's actually the most popular type of game, if I remember correctly. You have MOBAs, then you have shooters, strategy, et cetera, et cetera. But MOBA is, it's what League of Legends is, it's what Dota is. It's what a lot of the knockoffs in China are. It's a very popular type of game. And it also all comes down to ease of accessibility. It's a very easy genre to get into in the sense that the game isn't too hard. The game is comprised of five players. So even if you're bad, you know, your teammates can sort of make up for it. You're only 20% of the team. And again, it sort of leads to people being able to get into the game a lot quicker.
Got it. Yeah, what did I used to play? Age of Empires.
Oh, basically it. Oh, wait, no. I actually did. Have you ever played Civilization? If you played Age of Empires, really, you got into Age of Empires without getting into Civilization.
I was never much of a gamer. I was like studying chemistry and things like that. I always felt like I was wasting my time, which is silly because now it's become such a huge industry and people have made careers out of it. And it's global attention. So much global attention is spent on gaming. But the better understanding you have that, the better.
Yeah. I mean, so look at League of Legends, for example. You look at their Worlds, which is they had a big tournament back in 2019. At their peak viewership for the finals, which was, and luckily for League of Legends, it was a Chinese team playing a European team. So it's the two most popular regions for League of Legends. At their peak, overall, they had 44 million concurrent viewers. So at once, people were, and this is only on Twitch, by the way. This isn't even talking about what's going on in WeChat and things like that, where people are watching there, just because the Chinese numbers are harder to get. The media in China reported 200 million people watching it concurrently, but that seems a bit much. But so you have, you know, the finals for League of Legends, you have about what, 300 million views for the finals. That's a lot of views. That's NBA numbers. That's
significant portion of the population is signing in, the global population.
I mean, I guess that's what sort of lately in general with streaming, I wasn't really convinced that streaming could be a good platform for convincing people to sort of get into games. Just because, you know, streaming has always been a sort of a joke for me. But I've kind of seen it in chess, to be honest. Chess has been the best example of people getting into games. So about 2 months ago, a grandmaster in chess called Hikaru Nakamura. Do you know him?
I do not.
So Hikaru is sort of... So in the chess sphere, you have Bobby Fischer. Oh, no, sorry. You have Magnus Carlsen, who is sort of like Bobby... You know, today's Bobby Fischer, incredible player, top rated. And then under him, you have Hikaru. There's a big disparity between the two, but he's still number two rated in the world. And just recently, he started streaming chess on Twitch, which is the most popular American streaming platform.
Amazing.
Which is owned by Amazon, if I remember correctly, at the moment. Oh, I have a very interesting story with Microsoft trying to get into streaming. Have you heard of Mixer?
I have not heard of Mixer. I'll get into Mixer in a second.
So with chess, you had Hikaru Nakamura. This guy gets into Twitch and is like, oh, okay, I'm going to stream chess. The guy's incredible at chess. Like, he's very good, so it's fun to watch him. He started collaborating with other viewers. And chess at the time, the average viewership of chess total between all the streams was 1,000 viewers back when he got into it. Now he has 50,000 subscribers on his YouTube channel. And about 120,000 on your Twitch channel. And 120,000 on a Twitch channel is a lot for subscribers because you have to pay to subscribe. So his numbers on Twitch are incredible. He gets about 120,000 concurrent viewers, which, again, for Twitch, especially a game like chess, is a lot.
And you have to pay to subscribe?
Yeah, but subscribing in Twitch is different. On YouTube, you subscribe to follow them. You can follow on Twitch and you can subscribe. Following is 100% free. With subscribing, what you get is you get access to icons in the chat. You get a little shout out when you subscribe. And a lot of the time what the streamers will do, like have times where they turn their chat into subscriber only, which essentially means that only subscribers can talk. But you also have donations. A lot of people donate to Twitch streamers for some reason. It's very popular with the female streamers, which has sort of brought up a bit of controversy there. But...
I guess it's that concept of Reddit gold where if people like a comment on Reddit, they'll just send people, you know, 50 cents or something. Reddit, hundreds of thousands of people, that adds up, right?
Yeah. No, you don't even get by the way, with gold, you don't actually get the $5. You just get the little gold. Yeah.
Wow, I didn't even know that.
$5 as well.
Sure, yeah, a little
Yeah, I've actually got gold once. I was like, oh, where's so my
people
money?
Are just like spending it and then no one's
yeah, people, it used to be
the internet is so bizarre and so beautiful.
Reddit in general is, especially now, there's some weird stuff going on there with, because they've sort of taken to, because you saw what happened to Facebook last week, right? With the whole hate speech fiasco, which makes sense. I mean, it's a bit convenient that now the advertisers have to cut their advertising spend. They decide to stop advertising.
Man, I'm stoked. Those social media companies got away with, you know, literally murder. I mean, the fact that they're allowing these horrible things to happen. And they could see that it was like generating extra views, more ad clicks. So they promoted that content all the while having the entire time they had the tools to kind of switch that kind of stuff off.
Oh,
you know, it's just, and to me, it's like if you make a platform and it's like a free platform,
it has to be
kind of, yeah, I'm kind of open to the idea that, okay, people, you're not responsible for what people are saying. But if you're taking money, if you're getting extra clicks, if it's a profitable enterprise and you're making billions, or in this case, hundreds of billions, like a trillion plus, if you're making huge amounts of money, you have responsibility for this kind of stuff. You can't just wash your hands.
Yeah,
well, I'm very happy to see this happen. I hope this trend towards advertisers pulling out continues until that hate speech is resolved.
It's the hate speech is the biggest thing for me because it's insightful. I mean, Facebook, because it's just the way Facebook works, it's inciting speech. It leads to people, you know, actually going and becoming violent. It's horrible. Mm. It's absolutely horrible. And
I know people on YouTube. So YouTube is Google, right? So I've seen people get radicalized on YouTube, people that I know. It's like they start with like these kind of like moderate people, moderate right wing, and then a little bit more right wing, a little bit more. Before the end of it, they're talking about stuff that you have, like you're on another planet. You know, you've been disconnected from reality. But it's just the way it works. It's like if you, let's say you're kind of like some slightly right of center, you know, opinion, and that's what you like. If YouTube shows you something that's more center, more moderate, you're probably not going to be that engaged. If they show you something more extreme, you probably will be engaged. So every time you can turn left or right, you're just going to keep turning right. Obviously, on the other side, keep turning left until you end up in some crazy spot.
Yeah, well, it's because of like the Facebook rabbit hole, and not Facebook, so the YouTube rabbit hole in general is very interesting because you hit it on the spot there. YouTube takes you on weird trips. If you just spend a lot of time on YouTube and click, 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 by the end of the day, it's like, oh, okay. Oh, a Ben Shapiro thing came on my feet. That's slightly right. Then you go to an Alex Jones thing. Then by the end of it, you're on the KKK's homepage and they're talking about why they should just end everything. Like it's ridiculous.
It's horrible, YouTube is,
and in news
regulations. They have responsibility.
Yeah, because they are responsible. And by the way, it's not just YouTube. TikTok's been victim to this as well. I mean, just recently.
I haven't seen that. I'm a big fan of TikTok, but is there radical political content on TikTok?
Yes. What do you mean? They're owned by China. They had it. First of all, there's massive censorship with anything anti-China. If you posted a video of, because, you know, there's a common comparison between the Chinese president, which his name alludes me, and Winnie the Pooh. So there was a trend on TikTok to compare the two, and every video got taken down. First of all, censorship in general, when it comes to a particular, like that kind of censorship is ridiculous. But more recently in regarding to responsibility, so someone live streamed them getting seriously injured on TikTok. What happened was TikTok reported it within the company within 2 minutes, reported it to the police within six hours, and the guy eventually died. So you have a whole case of negligence there. But the bigger thing is they left it on their site for 6 hours after reporting it immediately. They just take no responsibility when it comes to like internal moderation, which leads to these sort of events.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, they're complicated questions, but to me, the fact that if you're making money out of it, you have responsibility to act correctly.
But for the advertisers in general, I mean, it's just a very good time to cut advertising, period. And it's free advertising. They get their names out there. Oh, we're against Facebook. It's really good that they're doing it, though. It's hopefully a move in the right direction, but I'm just with these things, I'm always afraid it's going to be a month and then we're done. Because, you know,
Hey, what do you think about Activision and Blizzard and EA and those two gaming stocks?
Well, it's an interesting question because as stocks, they're not amazing because, again, the games are great. The games, I mean, for example.
Yeah. It's a hit business as well. I've been burned on gaming multiple times.
Yeah, it's a weird business because the success of games these days is sort of capped to the profitability, which has been a lot lower than it usually is. Because, for example, EA had, there's a few interesting mechanics that work within the industry. Let's actually start with Activision. So half of Activision's revenue comes from King, which is their mobile gaming platform, which essentially means it comes from Candy Crush. And that's about, if I remember correctly, to the tune of $500 million. And then the rest
than,
of it.
That's current, is it? That's more than I expected. I don't own these stocks.
No, these
half's coming from Candy Crush.
Yeah, half of it's coming from Candy Crush. Wow. Which is, Candy Crush is still number two on the mobile game charts.
That's amazing. Today. How do you get money out of Candy Crush? How do they monetize it?
If I remember correctly, it's a freemium model in the sense that they give you a certain amount of time to play. If you want to play more, you have to pay. I'll be honest, I've never played Candy Crush. It's a bit of a brain dead game. But I mean, just if you look at, by the way, this is just before I go on, I'll stick to one last thing about mobile games. If you look at the top 10 mobile games, seven of them are IPs that have been converted from PC or console. PUBG, Call of Duty Mobile, Roblox. I mean, Roblox is just your classic PC game, and that's number one at the moment, by the way.
I don't actually know Roblox. What's that about?
It's sort of like Lego, but
like
on
Minecraft.
Minecraft is there as well, which is another PC IP turn mobile. But Roblox is similar, but marketed to a lower age audience, which speaks to the accessibility standpoint. But it's very much like a kid's game, if I remember correctly. But there is good. No, it's a kid's game.
It's a hit game. Yeah,
it's a kid's game. But it's also privately traded, so it's not bad.
That's a tough one, because, you know, you'd say a lot of people, I mean, I've had experience in getting burned on games because they're hit businesses, but then you see these franchises like Call of Duty that just keep on going.
They're invincible.
And seem unstoppable. And
well, it's not.
There's definitely something there. It's not entirely. It comes back to that, I guess, our usual things of customer love and follow the data, like what are people playing. It really fits into that.
It's not. It's also critical, by the way. The gaming in general has a very interesting mechanic when it comes to critics, because critics are incentivized to give games good reviews, which lead to sales, pre-sales, which is probably the biggest driver of game sales.
Why is that? Why are they incentivized?
Because they get ease of access in the sense that to review a game, you have to play it. Games aren't movies. They don't take 2 hours to watch, right? Games, for example, take about 10 to 12 hours till you get the gist. That's like the lifespan of a game you can say, oh, okay, I know what's happening here. And so obviously that takes time, and you have to write a review. So you need a long time before to actually write the review. So you need early access. If you write bad reviews about games, they won't give you early access. And this isn't just theoretical. For example, with Activision's newest game under their studio, Naughty Dog, they just released The Last of Us 2. Which was, and by the way, sales have been insane. They shipped 100 million units. No, sorry, 100. So 12 million units within the last week. With it's been a massive success of a game, and that's at $60 a piece. So you can see how the money starts to add up, because that's the first week. But if you look at their Metacritic, their critic review score at the moment is 94 or 95. It's in the 90s. They have a H1 review score, but their user score is a 3.6. Because what happened was the critics gave them really high reviews, and then when the actual people that, you know, play the game play it, they're like, oh, this is kind of bad. Mm. But that just gives the gaming industry more, it's just armor. Because so much of it is driven by pre-sales. That sort of mechanic allows games to be impervious to negative criticism. Because I haven't seen a AAA title come out in the last 5 years that got a negative critic score. And that leads to sales. People that play games are a lot more picky with what they play.
Got it. What was that story you're going to say about Amazon getting into gaming?
Oh, no, this is Microsoft.
Oh, Microsoft, sorry.
By the way, you had, for some reason, Microsoft and Facebook together sort of thing. And they have sort of a track record of messing up when they try to do anything that isn't their core business. It's become a bit comical. But so with Mixer, which was Microsoft's equivalent to Twitch, about 2 months ago, they had this massive marketing campaign to try and get into the streaming industry. part of which was to take a lot of popular streamers out of Twitch. Oh, that's fine. That doesn't matter. Well, part of the reason was to take popular streamers out of Twitch. But popular streamers is the popular streamers, like Ninja, can't remember anyone else, but Ninja, and to take them out of Twitch and to put them onto a new platform by paying them massive incentives. Ninja was paid about $20 million for exclusive rights on Mixer. And what happened was it just completely flopped. No one went on Mixer. Even when the biggest streamers would go on Mixer, no one would actually watch it. Ninja on Twitch would get about 1 to 1.5 million viewers on his top streams. On Mixer, those numbers were decimated. He would get 100,000 on his best days. And all of a sudden, you have this new platform that just invests a lot of money and that completely flopped. And just a couple of days ago, they announced that Mixer is closing. They sold it to Facebook with the new Facebook Gaming, and which is also probably going to flop because you can't compete against something like Twitch. When something's a market leader and it's hiding in that area, you just can't compete. You saw that with NVIDIA. You saw that with Twitch. You just can't.
Yes, in this case, yeah. I mean, you can only look at one. So yeah, whatever the global attention span is for gaming, you can only, you know, you can be on the best one or you can be on the second best where there's like less. Like it's such a winner to take all.
Oh, yeah. Well, just look at YouTube. Have you seen another video platform come out for the last 4 years, despite YouTube being horrible to its content creators, despite YouTube having issues with hate speech and all the other controversies? YouTube is still number one. But you just can't compete. When people are on a platform, they don't want to leave it. It's the same even with, I guess TikTok's a different example. TikTok's the most Chinese app in the US markets at the moment. And I think that's a trend we're going to keep seeing going into the future of American culture being a bit more Chinese with its consumer trends.
I'm just waiting for someone to do Pinduoduo in the West. That would be, someone's going to make tens, if not hundreds of billions of dollars out of that.
Well, it's funny. Back in the day, the trend was you'll take a US company and we'll make it Chinese. But it's starting to become the other way around. China started to sort of lead the market when it comes to trends. And I think that's largely because of, well, trends are sort of like viruses in the sense that you need a high amount of population to create a trend, right? There's a viral, well, it's why they call it viral. There's an outbreak within a trend. A lot of people get in it. And the more people you have, the quicker trends pass by and you can go to the next one. So with short streaming, in the US, you had that with Vine and then it disappeared. It didn't have sort of the tailwinds it needed to stay afloat. But all of a sudden you have TikTok, which is a Chinese application that's built off sort of the same tenants that Tencent's application use. And you see the US loves it. And I don't think it's going to go anywhere. I think we're going to continue heading that into that area. I think we're going to see a lot more live streaming on mobile devices. I think we're going to see a lot more consumerism on mobile devices because the whole shtick with China at the moment is they do everything on their phones as opposed to the US. US aren't, they're not as big as doing everything on their phones.
Absolutely. What do you think about things like 3D gaming and where gaming might be in a few years' time?
I've been hearing that for the last 5 years.
Yeah, no.
VR, AR.
What is it? VR, AR, Internet of Things. These are things that just...
Well, no. Okay, wait. Don't put Internet of Things, I feel, has some weight to it. That just describes, you know, interconnectivity within products. That is perfectly fine. That is when you need your smart trucks to talk to your centers, and that makes sense. I actually think there's applications there. With VR and AR, I think it's more like the fad thing, sort of like 3D printing in the sense that it was just never profitable enough for them to be too successful and not accessible enough at a low price point for people to get around it. It's also, people just don't like it. It's not as fun. People don't play games to exercise. I mean, the whole idea of VR, it's kind of like Wii, but a bit more. Do you remember the Wii back in Nintendo?
I do, yeah. It's a pretty good craze. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, but you see it didn't last.
I'm just not a gamer. It's just,
The Wii was fun. Wii bowling was fun. But it doesn't stick. To be honest, that's sort of the issue with Wii. The native games were too good, so no one would buy the actual games. The developers had no incentive, because I'm sorry, if you bought a Wii, all you played is Wii tennis, Wii bowling, Wii wrestling, and that's about it.
But it was really interesting how you said chess and talked about live streaming, because I guess you think things like Twitch have come out of nowhere, but people have been like actively following live chess games pouring over commentary on previous games. Like, there's a huge historical precedent for this.
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I never actually thought of that. It's a really interesting point.
It existed for a while, but now it always goes back to accessibility. With something like Twitch, I mean, so the sort of historic chess commentators I remember is like Agamemnon and all the YouTube channels that go over chess and display games. But the thing is, they're very heavy. With someone like Hikaru...
Did you watch those? Did you watch chess YouTube
videos?
Yeah,
I loved chess videos. I was never that good at chess. I was rated the highest I ever got to on chess.com was 1400. But I still love chess analysis. I just think it's a very interesting game. I also watch Hikaru, by the way. I think it's a very fun stream to watch.
What's that, sorry?
I watch Hikaru's stream, the big chess guy from earlier.
Right. Got it. I don't have any favorite chess players, sadly.
Well, mine was, I was a bit of a follower in the sense that, sheep. In the sense that Magnus Carlsen's my favorite chess player. He's everyone's favorite chess player.
But now young.
He's young.
Yeah, he's probably the only modern chess player I know.
Yeah, he's the modern. He's the Bobby Fischer of today. He has Bobby Fischer energy, that guy. He radiates it. And he's also surprisingly good at everything. He also took first in the world in Fantasy League, which is shocking to me. As a chess player, how he finds time to do that.
He was first in the world in some other game.
Yeah, no, on Fantasy League.
Wow, he must have really...
he's just smart.
Something, the way his mind is wired must be very much...
Wait, do you know what Fantasy League? It's just fantasy soccer.
Oh, right. No, I didn't know
Yeah,
that.
It's not the most... there's a lot of... I've never played Fantasy League. But there's a lot of analysis too, though. But the fact that he's best at two things at once, I mean, just pick one. Come on. Leave some for the rest.
Why don't we wrap things up there, Ben? That was really interesting. Yeah, we should have another discussion soon.
I agree.
Those trends around gaming and chips, particularly gaming, I think. I mean, it's so consumer-driven. And where people are spending their time is so relevant because often they spend their time long before the money comes, long before it's relevant for investing or relevant for business. But it's clearly
it's
like an era.
The most consumer-driven industry out there, gaming. I've never seen it. It's like the people that play the games choose the games. It's not really like that with television and other areas. I mean, Netflix can just pump out content and people watch it. With gaming, it's a lot more people. You have to pump out the content people want. It has to be of high quality. Otherwise, it just goes to waste.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks so much, Ben. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Speak again soon.
Catch up.
And that wraps up episode 30 of Frazzers Capital Podcast. I'm Michael Frazzers, Portfolio Manager, Frazzers Capital Partners. And if you want to learn more about us, you can go to www.frazzerscapitalpartners.com. Catch you next time.